because thinking is real, and it has fallen away before you can stop it. So when one thinks that one stops thinking is wrong because it has fallen away before, you will stop it.
Stop. Thinking is the creator. Be careful. It may lead you to the wrong theory or idea.
Any type of thinking is okay. Even wrong thinking. If there's study of it, if there's understanding that it's a mode of thinking, it can even be thinking of something that's wrong thinking, because there's understanding that it's a moment of thinking that way.
If you think that this is your money, so that's a problem.
No, there's no problem. Be careful. It's your money.
Also, that's your money. It's not yours.
You can think it's your money, but you understand that it's just thinking. Just that thinking
you
that it's
some right theory.
It's thinking, not you. Who is thinking?
Yeah, the right thinking.
But the object, the thought can be, oh, this is my glass, this is my microphone, my tape recorder.
Yeah.
Because thinking can think about anything. But when there's right understanding, it understands. It understands that thinking is not you anymore. It's only a moment of that characteristic, that reality, which thinks different from hearing, smelling, tasting, because it cannot see, it cannot hear, but it can think. That reality can think.
You can think and you can create.
No, it's only thinking.
Only think.
Yes.
Cannot create.
No. Whatever.
For what element create?
Whatever arises depends on condition. You may think that you build a house, but without block, without wood, without instruments, there can not be any house.
Thinking is one factor of condition. Combined to any existence of group or noun. Thinking is very important. It recalls your memory. It adds previous theory.
What makes up a day? We want to have a lot of understanding, we want to have a lot of wholesomeness, and we want to avoid or have no unwholesomeness. But I think the real characteristic of understanding is that it understands, it doesn't mind at all whether the reality is thinking or seeing or hearing or sound, wholesome citta, unwholesome citta. It understands. And this is the real development. This is the meaning of developing detachment from the realities, not taking them myself, not minding what it is that appears at this moment.
This is the information said in the Anatana Sutra.
So never mind if it's thinking or seeing or visible object. The real strength of Panya is that it can understand whatever reality appears at this moment. We don't have to select a certain
refer to another theory, for example. We refer to someone high in the heaven.
It doesn't mean we have to change our life, but
even
begin
wrong,
slowly to develop more understanding.
Wrong theory of government, wrong political theory can kill millions.
Or your wife has to stop going to the spirit house. It doesn't have to be any big change, but slowly one can begin to develop more understanding.
In a sense of belief, she will know dependence.
You, what did Buddha teach, or who was Buddha? What would be your answer?
It's a person who offer us his teachings, how to see or hear things or anything with verities, without.
So he is very common, like anybody.
He's very different from other people because he's Nippon, right? He's enlightened.
The Arahanta is also enlightened too.
But his Arahanta didn't provide us as many teachings as Buddha and other Arahantas. just follow the Buddha, follow his teaching, and the Buddha the most meticulous as far as the verities are concerned. Is this true? Because he considered every angle of life.
Just consider?
Not just consider. He includes every angle of life in his teaching so that we will be aware of the verity of life, so that when we see things, we don't add any flavor or any bias on it. It is true.
And what did he teach? What did he teach? If you believe in him, if you have confidence in him, and people ask, why do you believe in his teachings?
As Kunina said this morning, as Ajahn Suthin talk on television, on radio, we believe in his teaching because he teaches us to be aware of rarities, to understand verities as they are, every moment, every single moment.
And what are the realities?
Yeah.
Maybe you would be asked on and on and on. Who knows?
You mean other rarities? But kusala and akusala are not virtues.
Why not? Anything which is real is reality.
So I understand that kusala and akusala.
Kusala and akusala.
Yeah, akusala are the just jetasik. But anyway, rarities can be kusala and akusala as well.
Anything which is real, we fix to that. And we stay on that. Anything which is real is reality.
Is my answer correct or not?
But you might be questioned on and on more than this.
Because most people think that they understand realities already.
But I will tell them that they will have to just try seeing things and feeling and hearing things in front of them first, to develop their awareness, to develop their understanding of realities that close to them first, and then after that they can. They have to link themselves with rupa first, and then they can deal with nama. It is correct. I mean something abstract.
How about making it more concrete? Years at this moment. This is more concrete, not abstract.
When I mean abstract, I mean aversion or jealousy or love.
So if there is no jealousy now, there cannot be any awareness of jealousy now. If something happens and there is jealousy, awareness can be aware of it. So that's why we say we cannot be selective. Ordering. It's a matter of understanding and being aware of the reality which appears now. Maybe it's not jealousy, maybe it's pleasant feeling, or maybe it's calmness, or maybe it's seeing.
Yeah.
So we don't have to think in abstract terms or talk about other realities. It could be any reality. But it's useful to hear more details about all the different realities. Otherwise, even if it appears, there's no understanding.
So it's mean that when I teach them, I shouldn't distinguish whether it is a concrete realities or abstract realities.
Or
right?
Conventional. Are you talking about absolute realities and conventional realities? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, yes, I think it's very helpful to distinguish. So conventional realities are what we were talking about earlier. I'm brushing the teeth, I'm lifting my bag, I'm going to build a hospital. These are conventional realities. These are terms and words we use for convenience, and we can continue using them. But while we continue using them, we also develop more understanding of absolute realities, such as seeing and hardness. Yes.
Personally, I think this is a very difficult area, and I don't find it easy to give an answer to the casual inquirer who may or may not be interested in actually, but they know that you have an interest in Buddhism from some source or other, so they say, you know, what's Buddhism all about? And you can't launch into something about citta and cetasika and rupa to these people because totally beyond comprehension. So it's difficult, but the best answer I can come up with is something along the lines of it teaches you about what is the reality of the present moment or what is really happening at the present moment.
But if then
come
they say, well, what is the reality at this present moment, or you say, what is really happening at the present
right.
moment, then they have the idea that what is really happening is brushing your teeth, or...
Well, then you can explain, I suppose, that there are different experiences through different sense doors, and that they are separate kinds of experience, but we
so
don't
distinguish.
Then you're talking
about namas and rupas.
Yeah, you are. Of course you're talking about namas and rupas.
Do you think that citta, cetasika and rupa are difficult to understand?
Yes.
Yes, very. Yeah. For the rest of us.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Totally.
Totally strange.
Totally strange.
Yeah.
Totally strange.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that only the words are the problem.
No,
because
the whole outlook
concept
very difficult.
Yeah, because when we talk about the experiencing and the object which is experienced, what's that? Seeing, what is seeing? See.
They don't like
very,
it.
Very
they don't like that at all.
I see.
They would say table.
Suffering.
Table and
they want to hear about suffering
person.
First.
Oh,
suffering
what is suffering then?
Yeah.
Suffering what is suffering?
Compassion.
Yeah.
All these things happen to the jettison. So concentrate on the jettison.
Sickness, old age, and death is a good approach to start this.
Really?
And then come to suffering and a deeper meaning.
Really?
And the mind.
Uh-huh.
You can then talk about the mind, the different moments of consciousness, and carefully explain about what is wholesome and what is not wholesome. And then about karma is more difficult, of course. And
in
result
the,
and
in
rebirth.
The...
And they will ask you a lot about rebirth and reincarnation, they say.
Can they understand enlightenment then?
Sorry?
Can
no,
they understand enlightenment?
No,
they know that Buddhism talks about
this is a
nibbana.
Lot more interesting.
So?
Nibbana the result.
So,
nibbana
the result. What is enlightenment?
So it's more difficult to tell them when you don't start with the realities. When
very
you talk
difficult.
About sufferings
mm-hmm.
and enlightenment. It's
yeah.
impossible if there is no understanding of realities.
But this is what they're going to ask about. They're not going to ask about realities. They're going to ask
but
about
but how
suffering.
Do they come to the term suffering and enlightenment? It means that they have some knowledge about the teachings.
They have read about it
yeah.
generally,
very
in general books.
Yeah.
and they suffer in their own life and they look for a solution.
I'm sure they don't like me.
No.
but anyway, it is like to like a Dasutin is like to have an acquired taste, you see. It takes a long time. It takes a long time to like her, to understand her.
Like one of my friends from the discussion in Hong Kong, and you know, she's well-read and knowledgeable, and she thought you were lovely and very wonderful, but totally confused and perplexed by what you were talking about. And this is,
I think that is the easiest thing, because we're talking about anything which is real at this moment. See, like visible object, they know what appears now, but we talk about other reality which sees or which experiences it, to show them that there cannot be the appearing of visible object without the experiencing. So it's interesting.
They think it sounds very mundane and boring, and like Klaus said, they think it sounds very obvious.
You are quartered.
Yesterday you said it's obvious that you're seeing invisible. You agree with
me? But they may not see the same.
You know why? Because you try to reach that real thing through logic. You cannot reach that phenomenon through logic, only through feeling.
What is this feeling that you're talking about anyway? I'm totally confused.
Do you have feeling?
What feeling is it?
Yes.
It's confusing.
Yes, another key word, feeling.
You're losing a lot. What feeling do you need?
You know, a newborn child, do they have feeling? Do they have language? Do they have logic? Yeah. Do they have logical thinking?
What reality is logical thinking?
Logical thinking.
Yeah.
You use language to name, to symbol the things, the being, and then you define it, and then you relate it, and you give theory to it. All these things is logically processed. So don't use this process.
Definition of feeling.
Definition of feeling.
Yes.
Okay, you know it exists. Now you come to the definition, now it's a symbolic meaning. Many definitions. But feeling, to my understanding, is no logical, no language concern. In short, no language concern.
In order to let the other person understand feeling, how can you tell them about or answer?
Wow. If not enough, huh?
That's the body.
Do you
when
know
you,
it?
All right. When you laugh, is there any feeling? Any kind of feeling when you are laughing? What kind of feeling?
When you laugh?
When you are laughing.
Laughing.
Laughing. What kind of feeling?
If you laugh, now depend on the story.
No.
Like that.
Yeah.
And only the action of laugh is the expression of the mental intention.
Laughing.
Yes.
Ha 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 ha.
Yeah. You have feeling. So
what
you
kind
laugh.
Of feeling is there? What kind of feeling is there?
Anyway, it's in the good side. They have many, many names to the characteristic of feelings.
Can it be
so
unwholesome side as well?
Pardon?
Can it be unwholesome side as well?
Unwholesome.
Bad side as
well. Bad side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it
can because the expression can be expressed based on the right understanding or wrong understanding.
I mean laughing.
Yes.
What kind of feeling?
When you killing and you think that this is to sacrifice for the on high, and you will be receive a good return, so you can love it.
When one is crying, what kind of feeling is that?
Crying.
Yes.
Only the kariya, the action of the body,
the feeling,
which induced by the inside mental, can be good or bad side.
Yes, but the feeling at moment of crying, what kind of feeling is there?
Crying.
Sobbing. Weeping.
Feeling is what happened to your mind or chetasik.
There are three kinds
of
feeling.
So it's a mind is a master body, so they can induce the body express to crying or laughing or even action and other things.
In Tipitaka or in Abhidhamma, there are three kinds of five kinds of feeling.
Yes, five kinds of feeling.
Oh, three kinds of feeling.
Three kinds of feeling.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. For the purpose study, okay.
Pleasant, unpleasant,
yes.
Indifferent,
yes.
Bodily and mentally.
Yeah. Yeah. Indifferent means neutral.
Yeah.
Yes.
While one is crying, what kind of feeling is there?
Can be explained. We cannot say the universe.
Do you ever have unpleasant feeling?
I cry when you receive the universe.
Yes, but when do you ever have the unpleasant feeling?
I always have it.
Never but or always?
During the last few years, I can catch it, I can stop it.
No, I you had many years ago.
Oh, from the shine.
And pleasant feeling at different moments, right? And neutral feeling too.
Yeah, I maintain neutral feeling all the time in order my mind can get used to that feeling.
So
I can recall that feeling all the time as I want.
So feeling is cetasika.
Yes. So we train the feeling of the cetasik. So that's why I ask you to learn more about your cetasik and you can understand through feeling training, memory training, thinking training.
What about other cetasikas?
Another jetasika.
Yes, there are many jetasikas.
Jetasika is a common name.
Yes, but what are the other jetasikas? Because feeling is one kind of jetasika,
yes.
Memory is one kind of jetasika.
Yes,
and understanding.
That is my analyze, you know. I analyze through the purpose of function. So I set the memory functions, the thinking, processing, logic function, and knowing functions as at the chip size, and the feeling at another jetasic size. But anyway, it's the same thing. So if you say that it's jetasic, okay.
And I would
and
like
memory is jetasik. Okay, yeah. Thinking is jetasik.
You
okay.
Said that we better know more about jetasika, right? What else? What other jetasikas besides feeling and memory?
I think this about we have about dimension structure. We have five.
Jetasikas.
Beside the rupa, we have vedana, sanya, sankhara.
Yes, but how? I would like to understand the other jetasikas as well. Not only feeling, not only memory, not only awareness, not
yes,
only...
Yes, memory.
Besides memory, besides feeling.
Is processing of thought.
What else besides memory?
And the knowing or experiencing or observing what you talked yesterday.
Awareness.
Is another function.
Yeah, besides that, what else?
I think that's all.
No, 52 kinds.
Oh, if you analyze into more details, this is a lot. Because even memory, you have many kinds of memory, feeling, many kinds of feeling, thinking, sankhara, you have many kinds of sankhara. Even vinyā, you have many kinds of vinyā. But I not go to really more detail. I'm sorry. Suffering is
rebirth,
suffering, enlightenment, and rebirth. These are the questions.
Out of suffering, how to hear it?
Why do Buddhists believe that everything is suffering?
It's very pessimistic.
So,
actually, suffering, if one explains as you usually do, how nothing in our life stays, and because it doesn't stay, it is inherently unsatisfactory because we cling to what cannot stay, and that this is the real meaning of suffering. I think that on an intellectual level, most Westerners can appreciate this, and this explanation of suffering, usually they appreciate it very much. So one can say that. The other thing that I think can be a useful approach is when people talk about, well, what is Buddhism? If one starts by saying, understanding what is useful and useless in life, and then by useful you
useful is the development of all kinds of wholesomeness or good deeds. And they'll say, well, this is the same as in all religions. And also one has to understand, one might have the idea when one gives a gift that this is wholesome, but in fact one can learn to be more precise, because in fact when one gives the gifts, there are moments of good intention, good thought, and wanting to make the other person happy, but there are also moments of perhaps hoping for some acknowledgement or hoping the person will appreciate the good gifts. So there are different moments involved, so one can learn to recognize only what is good and bad in a conventional sense, but one can begin to know more about different moments. And then when they begin to understand a little bit more about the importance of moments through an example like that, that is quite easy for people to understand, one can say, and while one's giving the gift, in fact they're not just moments of consideration for the other and thinking of oneself, in fact there are other moments of seeing, hearing, thinking about something quite different, so one can begin to be more honest with oneself, to really understand more about what makes up our life. And then of course the main distinction between Buddhism and other teachings is that one begins to understand that they are different realities. Like we say, oh, what is kunatura? Is it the happy moment now or the sad moment 5 minutes later? The happy moment is kunatura. What about the sad moment? So what we take for being a being self are in fact different realities. So this way they can, you know, if they are sincerely interested, they begin to learn the essence. But I think even a topic like suffering, you know, when one explains the meaning, people can appreciate it. If they ask about enlightenment, I think it's very helpful too to talk about, again, to bring it back to this moment and say enlightenment is the fully developed wisdom. So the only way to understand what enlightenment is to understand what wisdom is now. And wisdom means knowing what our life is at this moment, and that is the way it can grow to eventually
about meditation as well, I think.
So you can say, well, there are different kinds of meditation. Some people think that you have to go to a special place and follow a special practice, but the real meaning of meditation is mental development. And as taught by the Buddha, the real meaning of mental development doesn't depend on a particular place or time, because if there is the beginning of the development of wisdom now, this is mental development. In fact, one doesn't have to wait. But some people like to go to the forest, it's all right. Some people like to go to the cave, it's okay. But in fact, there isn't a rule, because in the Buddha's time, people meditated or developed wisdom in many different places and situations according to their preference or their inclination. And I think that for most people it can be quite a relief to find out that they don't have to do something special. Some people feel that, oh, if they only had more time to go on a 2-week course in Burma, or if only they didn't have to look after their wife and children and earn money, then they could become wiser. And when they hear that in fact, even while doing their regular job and looking after their wife and child, they can in fact develop more understanding, I think it's a real relief for people.
Okay.
Because it makes life so difficult when you think that you have to restrict the development to a certain place and time. or if you feel that every time your home is too noisy or your work situation is too busy, that there can't be any mental development. So in fact, Buddhism is meant to be a part of one's way of life. It's not something that has to be done at a certain time or place.
Is it art that they would ask?
But I don't know.
Yeah, maybe something more. Yeah? What else would they ask?
They want to know their own mind, most people. So what the mind is, you can explain that there are moments of consciousness in detail. You can come to the details in that way.
The other thing they ask, in fact my friend asked me the other day, is because Christians are very conscious of the fact that the Bible may not be authentic and it's a later version, and they say, how do we know the Buddhist texts are authentic? Yeah. Because they weren't written down by the Buddha or in the Buddha's time. And so no signature. And so if you talk about 17-minute moments of consciousness and these details, how do we know definitely that this is authentic? Isn't it blind belief?
Another view that people have is that they think of Buddhism as being very introspective, thinking about yourself.
Very selfish.
So they think it's kind of selfish, and that you're less inclined to help other people if all the time you're just thinking about your own mental state. A bit like some views have been reflected here, that maybe you're not so inclined to help other people. So you would need to explain about that too.
So how would you explain it?
My understanding, help other people sincerely.
If you have more understanding of what is wholesome and unwholesome, you see many ways of helping other people, many different ways of helping other people, and you understand that you don't have to go out and do some big act to help other people. You don't have to look for other people to help. You have contact with people all through the day, and just by understanding more about what is useful for oneself and useful for other people, that is what is wholesome and unwholesome, that one has more wholesomeness, which is helpful to other people in itself.
Yes, we talked already about the last citta of this moment and then the next citta of the next life. And it's only one moment. Just like now, there's only one moment of citta and it falls away. And then it conditions the next moment.
But our friend in Hong Kong, very interesting to him in Buddhism, or the thing that he is most interested in is death, because he is very afraid of death.
Yeah, he said it on the tape.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, what is your answer? Someone is very afraid of death. How can an understanding of death help?
It's only one moment, so short. So maybe he is afraid of the pain before death, or thinking about it. It's a version.
What he's afraid of is he feels he's accumulated so much knowledge and skill all in this life, and he's afraid of losing it all. All his the books he's written and all the scholarly things he's achieved, and he's afraid of losing it all.
But he has to accept it. He cannot change it.
Thank you. Kunsichin gave a very interesting answer, which was that clings to the idea of self, one will always be afraid of death. And it's only by understanding anatta that one will lose fear of death.
Previous moments, isn't it like death too? Completely gone, never come back? What you have previously, even a minute ago,
they would say still have the book written in previous moments, they still have the copy of it now.
And they can recall the knowledge of the previous.
So they will have something different, but they still have something after death. That person would enjoy having it, no matter what it is. Like we enjoy having this life, no matter what life is, what kind of life we have. We cling to one's own life.
Or maybe what they're afraid of is they don't know what they will have, or if they will have anything.
They will have something. They will have something, for sure.
I suppose you could say it's a bit like a child who loves his toys so much he doesn't want to grow up because he knows when he has to go to school or get a job he can't play with his toys or whatever, but it inevitably happens. But one always finds new attachments, mm-hmm. new things to enjoy. So it doesn't matter much where we are.
But you can show them when they fear death that this fear is a kind of aversion, a negative, you can say, mental state, if you don't want to use cetasika. And it is conditioned by attachment, because if you get what you want, you are happy, but if you don't get it, you are unhappy. So all people can understand that, the very simple things. It's the same when you fear death, you cling to life and you want it. But actually it's unreasonable when you don't get what you want that you have aversion. But they can better understand why the cause of their fear.
If somebody would like to enter monkhood, right, and just to isolate himself from other sufferings, and lots of people would like to do this, what can you do? If, for example, engineers, doctors, and everybody enter monkhood, what shall we do? But no, that is impossible because everybody's karma in the past is not the same. Not everybody is going to have this pure life.
And what do you mean by what do we do?
What do we have to do?
Yeah, I don't understand that. We don't have to do anything if anyone would like to become monk.
But if we, because if doctors and engineers or of these people become monks, right? And then nobody is going to work for us. That's impossible.
But you could also say if everyone became a doctor, there wouldn't be anyone to collect the rubbish. So
to collect rubbish.
Well, everyone wants to go to university, want to become a student. They can stand it. Probably there is the wish to do so, but they never will do because of different conditions.
But the very interesting thing in your question is, you say if everyone wants to do this to lead the pure life, so. Why is this life purer than the lay life? In what way is it purer?
What is the goal of monkhood? You will get lots of questions about that.
Yes, this is like when in Dan Sujin's tape, Dan Sujin says that some people would like to have a bapachit life because there's no. At least no suffering, no, that there are less sufferings than being layman. It means monk.
The citta of the monk.
In what way is there less suffering?
For example, if we work, we have to deal with many kinds of people. Smaller chance, right?
Of what?
For example, being angry because a monk doesn't have to deal with competitive people. The monk doesn't have to do with people's desire of getting promotion.
I would like to have different food as I would be offered. You know? Someone offered
me food and I would like to have something different, I would get, might be very angry about it. Myself, if I had to go to a monastery and I had to lie on a bed very hard, I wouldn't like it. And what is that? You will get angry. Or disturbed or distracted.
What
and
about
then
if,
you cannot hear or listen to music as you like to.
Or, what about if it's not as quiet as you would like? Noise from outside.
The lay people don't behave properly when they come to visit you.
Tradition. I know it is a quite wrong tradition. According to Thai or Thai tradition, they believe that every man has to enter monkhood at the age of 21, right? So that they will understand life more. In Thai, we have a saying that "tong buat kon biat." It means "buat" means enter monkhood, "biat" means getting married. I believe that this is not the right way of believing in Buddhism.
Mm-hmm. Not part of the teaching.
Not part of the teaching.
But just the time.
Tradition
is
a custom.
Yeah, it's a Buddhism. Custom. It's a custom.
Through all one's life, never enough. When one knows what is going to be left to understood. From moment to moment, okay. Those moments are without awareness, but when there's more understanding, right awareness can begin to be aware because it has right understanding of the object that it should be aware correctly, whether it's the reality which experiences or the rupa which cannot feel, cannot experience anything. And there's idea all the time about one's lung, one's mind, one's blood, but when there's touching, only the primary rupas that can appear through body sense. And the other rupas have completely gone because the lifespan of rupa is so short, much shorter from the distance between the moment of hearing and seeing. Thinking about the shape and form, lack of this life, and moments without experiencing objects through six doorways in between. And the next moment, it continues.
So you mean the thinking is much longer?
No, each citta, the process of thinking can arise more often. So it seems like thinking is longer, but actually, through mind door, when one study closer, one will see that citta, which is a mind door process, has less number than citta, which experience rupa through sense door. But it can arise more often.
So it's 17 times more often?
No, 17 times shows the lifespan of a rupa. One rupa can stay only for 17 moments of citta arising and falling. It shows that citta arises and falls away faster than rupa. The mentality falls away faster.
Could you repeat what you were saying about the time between different jittas experiencing the same object? If that's what you were saying. It's longer or shorter than...
Talking about thinking, whether thinking is longer than the sense door process. Mm. But actually, the process of thinking, the number of jitta, which is the process of thinking is not as long.
Not as long.
Yeah, as the sense door process.
Mm-hmm.
But since thinking process, the whole process arise and then arise more often.
Right.
So it seems like the thinking process, thinking is longer.
But because it's more often.
Right. Because even one does not see, one can think. And a flash of experiencing whisper object condition. Many
so much thinking.
Yeah.
So there's more thinking than actual experiencing of the visible object. Or
by more processes.
By more processes. Is that because of clinging to the object, or is that just because the way things are?
By the nature of
jitta.
Yeah.
So even someone who was enlightened, for example, would still have more moments of thinking.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But it's the, with us, the thinking is accompanied by...
We think of the man coming here. But it's also seeing.
Yeah. Because the thinking seems to be in connection with what is experienced, the shape and form of what is experienced, as well as the rest of the story about who he is and why he's coming. And
for thinking and this feeling, because I'm not really happy with this experience word. Because experience, I think, actually is also thinking together.
No.
So you see experience just as the feeling side, the rupa side.
You mix thinking with seeing?
No. I'm just not so really happy about the usage of the word experience for only rupa, because I think experience means thinking.
Well.
Yeah, yeah. So I ask, is there another word? Or
contact.
You have it about the sensory impingements, you mean through eyes and ears, that you think more of a physical process.
No, I
is
mean...
Is that right?
The thinking and the feeling, yeah?
Yeah.
The thinking and the feeling, is there one word for it together? Because in my opinion, it's experiencing. But you use the word experiences in the way of only feeling.
No. Well, I use it in the way of
very general.
But not thinking, let's say.
Experience, we use it for a very general nama. It experiences an object. So it can be feeling, it can be thinking, it can be seeing, everything which is mental.
Yeah, but then it's different from your word.
No,
in
I
his
don't
word,
think
yes.
so.
You said the experiences for the feeling.
No, feeling is an experience.
Okay, maybe I misunderstood it, but in the context you said it, you use the word experience always with seeing somebody, but you're not... We had this discussion about thinking and seeing and the time between, yeah?
Yeah.
And then you used the word experience related to the longer feeling in opposition to the shorter thinking, but more often thinking, yeah? So I got the point that you think the experience is more the feeling side.
Not really, no.
Okay, so no problem. Yeah.
Because
together.
Because the moment of seeing, the seeing is not the feeling, but feeling and seeing arise together.
And experience is then this together,
same.
It's a combination.
Yeah.
It's a combination.
One moment of experiencing, like seeing an object, there are other mental factors arising together, like feeling and memory, together at that very moment. Because if there is no memory, no marking of the object, how can there be the taking that object for something? See?
So experiencing is a mixture of these things.
Experiencing is the moment of knowing what one object is appearing, like visible object appears, without any experiencing. No seeing, visible object cannot appear. But now visible object is appearing, right?
So you say, there is an appearing, then there is a seeing, there is a feeling, there is a memorizing, and there is an experiencing. Or is it not the same?
Let's talk about seeing. Visible object appear to a reality which sees it.
Right.
And that reality which sees, we call it citta, or consciousness which experiences. Its function is to experience something whenever it arises.
So the seeing process is an experience process as well.
One moment.
Okay.
When we talk about process, many moments.
And feeling as well. Contact instead of experience? Jitta contacts.
Contact is a jetasika. Contact, pasa jetasika.
In the Buddhist sense, contact is not what you think in conventional sense. It is a chetasika which helps citta to experience an object. So one of the six doors.
Without contact, for instance, there is eye sense and visible object, but no contacting chetasika, no that mental factor which performs that function of contacting, there is no seeing. Because the rupa and the rupa cannot contact itself without the
contacting mental factor that condition the moment of experiencing, which is seeing reality, visible object at that moment.
When you speak about moments, or you speak about 17 times more often, yeah, you have a type of time concept. What do you think about the time?
Is there
some time, or is time just an illusion?
When there is no reality, there is no time at all. The time indicates what or how many realities arising and falling away.
How many realities? But the same reality how many times? Not 10 different realities, or?
We talk about time only when reality appears and disappears, appear and disappear. For how long? How many times? How many moments?
Different chittas, different ones. But then it is counted as 70 moments to indicate that one rupa lasts as long as even 70 moments of chitta. So rupa is not so fast, but still fast.
But this has actually nothing to do with time.
There's process of chitta.
It's nothing to do.
Beyond.
So then time is what?
The arising and falling away of realities.
It happens during a certain time, or very short though.
But because it's meaningless, you cannot say it's long or short. It's just, it happens, but it's not the question. It happens in 1 millisecond or in 2 milliseconds.
Useless to count because it's so fast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Even the falling away of citta, which lasts for 17 moments, it's faster than one can expect. Because it's faster than separation, the seeing from hearing.
So you see time as a kind of reality, or is related to reality, or without reality there is no time, you say?
Without reality there is no time.
And also with appearing of reality. If reality would not be seen, or something like this, or appear, then there would be also no time, if it would be possible.
And when reality arises and experience object and fall away, so we don't mind about time either. But by saying morning to night or 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock, it indicates that there must be realities arising and falling away many, 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 as be counted as 1 hour.
But these 70 moments have a meaning because there are processes of citta. So seeing arises within the process, and the other chittas which precede or follow have a task connected with that process. That's why it said 17 moments.
I have no problem with the 17.
Mm-hmm. But you're thinking about time.
I'm more interested, let's say, you say that time and reality is somehow the same. Without reality there cannot be a time in the absolute way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you say, okay, and because it's a curing or arising, then we have the conventional way as well.
Right.
But in the absolute way, you say reality and time is actually the same.
Not the same.
Not the same, but it's a kind of...
In reality, time is only convention. We talk about time, right?
It's if only we don't talk,
yeah.
So it's no absolute...
No absolute reality. Time is not absolute reality. We just talk about time, so time is convention.
Consciousness is an absolute reality or not?
Consciousness is because it arises, it has its characteristic, it has its function. Anything which is real has its own characteristic, but time does not have its characteristic at all. It's only convention, like we talk about things.
But the chittas arise and then fall away within a certain
we talk about
fraction of time.
The lifespan of chitta, not time.
Yeah, lifespan.
Of chitta.
Yeah. And you cannot call that time, lifespan of chitta?
No.
Is it not within a certain...
It is the characteristic of chitta.
Mm-hmm.
Or the, you may say, use the term lifespan of rupa.
Yeah.
But what counted? Chitta, the arising and falling away of chitta,
mm-hmm.
not
10 minutes or 2 minutes.
No, yeah. Not that. Yeah. But so short, only mm-hmm. it is within a certain mm-hmm.
That's
time.
That's why we use time for understanding the arising and falling away.
Yeah.
That even one citta can be divided into three minor moments.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even if it is as that fast, because the beginning moment is not the same as the falling moment, and the moment in between the arising and falling is there too.
So there's a sequence, an order. So is that not within a sequence of time that you could speak?
Time is convention.
Yeah, we can use it in conventional sense.
Mm-hmm.
This life, past life, future life.
But sequence would be also conventional, so.
Because any reality must have its characteristic, its function. So in order to know whether this is a reality or not, one comes back to whether it has its own characteristic function.
Which are conventional.
Like, not conventional. For example, citta, which sees, has the function of seeing, now it sees. It performs its function of seeing when it arises. It has its functioning. When it arises, it has to perform its function when it's here. Hearing performs the function of hearing. It hears whenever it arises. Feeling feels. Memory remember marking. Greed attachment performs the function of attachment. Whenever it arises, nobody can change it from, oh no, stop it. Impossible.
But when we talk about past khandhas, the present khandhas, the future khandhas,
yeah.
There is a first, a first and a later. So when there is a first and an after.
That's why time is convention, but the arising and falling is real and reality is real.
Yeah, but can it not be said it is within a span of a moment, of a time, of time?
We need to use time.
We don't need to use the word time.
No need to talk about the time as time, but talk about the arising and falling away
mm-hmm.
of reality. Yeah.
I don't understand it really.
I'm wondering, because I understand it.
I would say it's time.
It sounds very nice, because for this karma story, it makes it very easy. If there's no time, then everything is very clear and easy. Because there's always a problem how it moves from this moment to the other moment. But if there are no moments, then no time moments, then it's very easy.
Time is not reality.
Time
is not reality. But we use the word time to tell which one, the previous one long ago.
Oh, in that way, in that sense.
Days,
But if in the absolute way, there is no time, then it's...
Time is not a reality.
Yeah.
But there is... a succession.
Succession, there is. Succession of chittas.
One moment.
In succession, following one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but this is not time related. Look, this is really a person problem. Don't worry about it. I just say, this karma is usually, if people ask you, is very much time related. They never understand the time point in karma. Well, many people don't understand it. Let's put it this way. But if there is no time in the absolute way, like karma is related to these absolute things, then it's very easy for me to understand at least, okay, forget this time moment, even if I cannot understand it 100% or I cannot explain it for 10%, but it makes me happy or I don't know, whatever, If there is no time in the absolute way, then for this karma it's very easy, easier.
You mean the previous one, the present one, we use that, see?
Yeah, because
to
actually
indicate.
It happens at the same moment, At this moment, but it's the same, at this moment, So there is no past, no future, there is a moment.
When we talk about this moment, the previous moment is past.
Right.
And the coming one is the future.
Right.
When we talk about this present one.
But this is a conventional thinking.
Time, only time is
right.
Convention, but reality is reality.
Yeah, but reality is, it's now, only
or
now.
Or previous one of the coming one.
I think when we explain things about realities, we have to use conventional words, like now, we have to use them to
and
explain.
And we cannot say there is a previous reality and a future reality.
Yes,
we
do.
We can say.
We do.
But it's conventional.
The word is
so reality
conventional.
Is
but
is
the
reality,
yes.
Has no time, you said.
Reality itself arises
at the moment when it arises, it's present.
Right.
And when it had fallen away, it's past, the past moment. We talk about reality, the right. past moment. And the next one is the future one for this moment.
Right, but the reality itself has no time and no past and no future.
Reality
is now happening.
Right, right. There's only one.
There's only one reality, not present. There are not three realities. There's not a past reality, a future reality, and a present
in
reality.
In one moment. But the previous moment is previous reality.
But reality is always related to a moment.
Yes, but what about this moment which has fallen away? It became the previous one very soon, very fast. And the next one became the present moment very fast too.
Yeah, but then this reality is finished already.
Each one arises and falls away.
Yeah, so it's fallen away already.
Uh-huh. But we can talk about the previous moments.
Okay, you can say it is a fallen away reality. But it's
fall away or previous one? Past.
Yeah, but it's finished already.
Not present one.
But reality actually means that it is now arising. So there is now something
but
at the moment.
Also the previous reality is reality, or was reality. The previous reality was a reality.
But at this former moment, not now.
Not now,
yeah,
not
yeah.
now, just one at a time.
Yeah.
One at a time,
yeah.
For citta.
Yeah.
And cittasikas, which accompany that
yeah.
particular citta.
Yeah, which makes it timeless somehow, the reality.
In terms of convention.
Like well, absolute as well.
Minute or years, month.
Or 4 months later. Mm.
When we talk about a year, what a year? No characteristic. A month, no characteristic. A day, a minute, no characteristic. But when we talk about reality, the present or the past or the future.
They have to talk about the past in order to explain.
Karma.
Yeah, right.
Accumulations. When we talk about karma, we better talk about result too, because karma is the cause and vipaka is the result. Otherwise, we talk just about the cause with no result. See? That's why when there is cause, there must be result. When there is karma, there must be vipaka. Otherwise, people will have no idea about then what? What's the use of understanding about karma when it doesn't bring or produce any result at all, but it will, and it do, and now it is the result of vipaka too, like seeing,
mm-hmm.
is the result of vipaka of karma.
Different from a person's tendency or accumulation, which is not
mm-hmm.
the result of karma.
Mm-hmm. It's only the result of accumulation. When one gets angry very often, for sure there is condition for future.
You mean we can't blame it on karma?
No. You cannot blame anything because there's nothing to be blamed. Only different realities succeed one another from moment to another.
What about if we get angry at some particular thing? Is that not possibly the result of some unpleasant experience in the past?
No.
In relation
even
to
the
that
object is so pleasant, it can condition anger if one has accumulation for anger a lot. One is so hard to please, see?
Why does one tend to get angry at particular things, though?
Because of one's own attachment. If one doesn't have any attachment to sensuous object at all, there can never be anger.
What if one's angry, particularly angry at something like being late or some kind of abstract thing like that?
At that moment, there is conditioned by previous accumulation of anger. You can be angry of anything, not just person or being. Or the weather is so bad, say it rains.
So if one gets angry at, for example, intrusive noise, you'd say it's because of one's attachment to silence.
Yeah,
to
certainly,
quietness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And previous anger at noise, does that give a tendency for more anger for noise, or is it only the attachment to quietness that conditions
more
anger.
One does not know that one is attached. One has attachment when there is anger. But to find out what conditions anger, it comes from attachment to whatever you like. And when that is not according to what you like, you dislike.
So that's different from the condition of karma, which produces result. This is the accumulation of tendencies which come out in the future. It's a different type of condition, because I know that some people find that difficult. They think it's all karma, whatever happens.
No, it's always conditioned, right? There are always conditions, and a lot of these conditions you can change. So conditions are changed.
Not that's good.
To come back to this reality. to this reality, you say reality arises and falls away.
Mm-hmm. When it's conditioned reality, only one reality that does not arise.
But between the arise and the fall away, there is one point which is just there or not.
Performing that function.
So there is a moment of arising, performing the function and falling away.
Yes. In Pali it's upata, arising, and chitti, stay for a short moment.
You say staying even.
It's very, very shortly.
I think you argue that there should not be a staying in one of your books.
Nothing lasts, everything is impermanent, and that's quite right. But for that moment of citta performing its function, it's just there for an extremely short moment, and then it has to fall away. So it's impermanent. So we can say nothing lasts.
And what about, what would you say about arising and falling away? What's in between is that?
Performing its function.
Matter you call it stay for a short moment performing the function, is there the moment between arising and falling away? There must be that very short moment too before it falls away or after it's arising.
Not sure. You know why? Because this arising is an activity. And performing a function is something what happens, let's put it this way, something what happens. And falling away is also something what happens. But if you say it's staying,
I don't know the word.
Even
the
if you
right
say it's
word,
very short,
it depends
it's
on
something
you,
different.
What do you call the moment between the arising and falling away?
But anyhow, it's
yeah,
important.
There is a moment, and that moment, depending on what you call. Each moment is so short because even one moment is short, but this is shorter when it's divided into three.
It lasts, but not forever. Very short. Or it's there, you could say it's there for an extremely short moment.
Very extremely short or only extremely short?
Very extremely short.
Very, very, very.
How many berries now?
Thousands.
Now we miss our friend. He will immediately ask
you,
how you experience the 70th berry. You cannot experience it. How you know it's more than three berries?
How can you experience or prove it? Yeah.
And this performing its function.
Each reality has its characteristic and its function.
Like?
Seeing feels.
Like seeing.
Feeling feels. Memory remembers.
And memorizes. Yeah.
And greed, attaching. Non-greed, detaching. Anger.
Instead of saying seeing sees, we could say seeing experiences visible objects.
Yes.
Same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have teeth?
Yeah.
Perfect question.
Whether you have teeth?
Do you have teeth?
Oh yeah, that's a good point.
Who is this you?
Okay, now. Or lung, or blood, or bones.
There is a lung.
Do you have?
There's a lung in my body, yes.
A brain. Is there a brain?
Sometimes. No.
Can you experience, can you touch it? Does it appear now?
Does it appear?
What you think you have?
Yeah. There is a brain working now. Or a lung breathing.
Through what sense?
To thinking. Maybe feeling as well.
You think of what? The word or what? When you say that you have
life. No, the activity. Teeth. The activity actually I'm thinking about.
But at moment of thinking, there must be object of thinking. Story. Right? Mm-hmm. The story of plan. So you may think that you still have everything in your body. So that is self. You still cling to idea that I have everything and it's there, it's mine. Mm. Actually, when reduce your life into a moment of experiencing a reality, no matter its rupa, which form, it falls away instantly, so fast, nothing left to be your. Only a moment of experiencing an object. That object could be direct experience, it's arising and falling away, to prove that nothing stays. And this is the way to eradicate the idea of self. Otherwise, there is no way.
Sometimes even you go to the dentist.
Because I have something hard inside here.
And to help me with my dosha and my mama and my stinginess. Maybe I need some encouragement.
Maybe it was the test point, like this morning you were talking about someone's weak point. And so when we had the discussion, I was going to say, well, what is my weak point you notice, but you're afraid to tell me. So maybe this is the test, so now you know the weak point, the dosa.
I don't find yet. I have to consider and think.
So difficult to look for. Regretting about the past or having dosa. Of course, if there's dosa and regretting, of course it shows the
attachment to self.
Clinging to self.
Yeah.
Thinking of oneself, not thinking of the others at that time.
By understanding vipaka, one knows that though I can condition anything.
Like you said before, it's like that because it has to be like that. It can't be any other way.
This is thinking like about story that can condition dosa.
Already, because you have to hear that again and again. Maybe I can remind myself, of course, but do be. And I find it somehow helpful when I hear it from the sutras, although I shouldn't be attached to her teaching.
And sometimes it's your own understanding, so it's not necessary to say that I say, because it's now your own understanding.
Mm-hmm. Like Kundun said to me, when people talk so long, the Anama Opa, she just mentioned that. But when I hear it from Kundun also, I find it helpful to remember it. And you reminded Kumbhaina about the shape and form and the visible object and the seeing of the visible object while we were walking there. We were always in the situation. I don't know, I find it helpful. Even you can say, yes, of course, I know it already, but it's in theory and I don't apply it.
Sometimes I think, like Lodovic, or we've heard it so many times, and really, why do we need to...
Yeah,
keep hearing or keep considering the same point, or why do we need to come to Bangkok to hear it more when we've heard it so much? But like Nina, somehow it seems to be more of a reminder, and Kalesa are so strong, like we're so overwhelmed by our dosa and our attachment that we need to hear so many reminders. But it does also, it seems strange, you know, why can't we just get it in a half hour discussion and be finished? Why do we need to hear so much?
Because one knows that that is not enough. Never enough to hear.
No, I just always understand why I have to hear it again.
Even the same thing from Buddha, that in Sutta, different suttas say the same thing about the same verses.
So much more, but for the beginner it seems that it should be enough. Because you mean this is just one aspect of life and there's attachment
because
to other
the
objects.
Lack of the confidence, like those who have heard and heard and heard and considered until it's become their nature, then they know that one would like to hear more.
So you would say, I mean, even in the Buddha's time, that the people who understood most are the ones who need to or see the value in hearing most. And this is interesting. I mean, one would think that it is the beginners that need to hear most, but actually, as you say, the beginners don't see the value in
hearing. Until the confidence is so well established, and then after that, people have different accumulation. Some would come to see Buddha, some won't, some stay somewhere and develop by themselves. This is your one, not
our one. So you could say it's like a U graph. So in the beginning, you only listen to a little, and then more and more and more, and then reach the point that it can...
anything can happen until one has attained enlightenment, but still the accumulations are different.
Friends of ours, you've heard quite a lot, and now they don't come to any discussions and they don't listen to any tapes or study, but they say, oh, they've heard so much and it's so useful and it's made a whole difference to their life, and that's very wonderful, but they're not interested to hear or consider anymore.
Because they take something more important.
Attached to other objects, more attached.
Yeah.
There have been several little bits of discussion about scientific points, like Klaus mentioned some, and Nina mentioned some, and I mentioned one or two. And just in general, and this is something that is difficult for all of us, just in general with regard to the scientific points, what is your answer? Should one just consider it as a different subject or just... Because it seems sometimes so difficult to reconcile.
For other subjects, other science, it's going to be changed because it's not exact like the enlightenment of Buddha. So it's useless just to fix on other subjects or rely on other subjects. For instance, the lifespan of rupa, see? The science can change from this to that more quickly.
quicker and quicker and quicker. But for Buddha, that is all. The 17 moments of citta, and who knows the arising and falling away of citta, say the 17.
But some scientific points have been proved very or exactly. Does it mean there is no value in science?
Not exact as the Buddha's enlightenment. When we talk about enlightenment, we mean that direct experience. That is only theory and thinking and experiment only.
In this case, when people say, well, how do you know that the teachings we have are authentic? How do we know it really is a Buddha's word? We have confidence, of course, but for the beginner or the newcomer, they say, well, you attach so much importance. You say there's 17 moments. You say it's more precise than science. But how can the beginner with no confidence, how can they know that these teachings are authentic when they were not written down by the Buddha?
It doesn't matter who wrote it. It doesn't matter at all, as long as you can study and consider that it's about reality, and you can go step by step by reading more, consider more,